Greetings, kindred witches. Welcome to the Atomic Hearth for this Sunday Haven.
Here we share our experiences as we build a modern-day inclusive witchcraft practice rooted in nature's seasons, celestial cycles, and the science of energy.
Join us as we build a practice that learns from our past, is rooted in our present, and works toward building a better future, all while connecting deeply to the earth and sky around us.
Let us begin a new era of witchcraft. Hi everyone, welcome to our grove here at the Atomic Hearth.
As always, we are so grateful for this community and for all of you for choosing to spend a portion of your day here with us.
We'd like to take a moment to acknowledge that we are currently here on the lands of the Coast Salish peoples, more specifically the Duwamish and Muckleshoot tribes. We want to take a moment here to honor the ancestors of the land on which we reside. Thank you.
Welcome to Atomic Witchcraft. Today we are continuing our Witch Path series, which explores the myriad of ways to build a witchcraft practice. Today is all about water witchery and the many ways in which water might manifest. Our Spring Sapling series really focused in on the basics of witchcraft, but now we want to zoom out and talk about the bigger picture. It's important to be clear that this isn't the only path, or one that needs to be followed step for step. Instead, the hope is to stir some thoughts and curiosity about what your own water witchery journey might look like. And yes, we are doing this for each of the elements, so earth, air, fire, water, and witch. So if water magics aren't a big part of your craft, check out our episodes on earth, air, and fire paths, and stay tuned as we cap off our series with an extra magical exploration of the fifth element, spirit, or what we call witch.
Just so much can be said about working with water in a practice, and in the countless ways it builds, moves, shapes, and provides the world around us. So given that, we've just got so much to potentially cover here. That said, just like for earth, air, and fire, the way that we'll do this is first we'll give a bit of an overview of all the different ways that water witchery might culminate into a more specialized path. Then we'll go back and dig a bit more into each of those specializations. We will talk about what a specialized practice might include, both big and small, key elements to consider in your path, tips and tricks from how we specifically practice, and even ways to incorporate this path in a more public or private way.
On an atomic level, water is truly unique in that it has three well-known states of matter, and a fourth that's been claimed and is up for debate. While Earth shows up in many forms, it's only the water element that truly changes its state of matter, from solid, like Earth, to liquid and then gas. Ice, water, steam. This makes water such a powerful element to work with. Its ability to shift through those states in a way that we can observe and even instigate gives us a hands-on transformation that offers potent and powerful energy. We have harnessed this energy in a variety of ways, and there is no doubt that water's ability to flow and change is detrimental to our survival on this planet. No water, no us. We are, after all, at least 60% water ourselves. Water shows us the power of change and impermanence. It is a clear example of a cycle that we see in micro and macro waves in our own lives, from weather storms to making a margarita. And because we host so much of it internally and naturally interact with it, it is often a very clear entryway into the elements. In the coming episodes, we will explore how water manifests in a craft practice that covers states of matter, waterways, the weather front, lunar tides, the cunning path, and a bubbling blend.
States of matter gets us started with, well, water's three states of matter. With liquid water, steam, and ice variations on practices with water as the essential and perhaps sole ingredient. Next, waterways collects the paths of practices in deep connection with water's natural ecosystems, habitats, and inhabitants. The rivers, ponds, lakes, seas, swamps, and oceans, and all that live and thrive within them, a witch in these realms is deeply in tune with nature's rhythms, needs, and complexities.
The weather front approaches the atmospheric path with a water-based lens, where we look more closely at the fog, snow, rain, and storm witches who work along this front. who weave together other elements for a cumulative weather witch and water elemental path. Going even higher in the sky, lunar tides illuminates the moon-based practice, shining that silvery light on witches who specialize in new or full moon magic and tidecraft. This practice places high value on those silvery moonbeams, making them the backlight to this path.
The cunning path grounds us back in the physical as we turn to the cleansing and healing properties of water, and even explore the water within ourselves in bloodcraft. And finally, a bubbling blend brings together brews, elixirs, and potions, each with their own distinct focus and form, from the delicious to the medicinal and to the strictly for magical purposes only. So, when considering how water witchery plays into your path, one or many of these aforementioned crafts may be woven together to create a practice that is unique to you.
As we read these lists, it's very easy to ask, why do those crafts make up that path? And how did we decide what is designated as a craft? Couldn't anything be a craft or area of study? And yes, the answer is that truly anything that you focus on and interact with its energy can become a source for your craft. In general, we approach this from three different angles as a way to understand a vast array of topics, styles, and approaches. It's not an end-all be-all or necessarily something for everyone. Instead, the idea is to provide context to a topic that is both deep and wide. A craft or study might be a way that we connect with energy. It is a way for us to go inward or find that stillness. This lets us sense information about that energy, much like how we read our own emotions. Often this connection can come from finding a state of flow in what we are doing. Then there are crafts that generate energy. This often involves some sort of action, movement, or catalyst. We use this energy to power our manifestations and spell work. And finally, there are crafts through which we exert or spend energy. These crafts become conduits through which we change, alter, or impact something in some way. In really effective spell work, we find ways to do all three within the manifestation. Ultimately, a witch will weave together crafts and paths to make their own unique practice, and some may choose to lean into a highly specialized path. Now, those are some big generalizations, but hopefully it helps you understand how we begin to categorize the atomically large ways in which witchcraft becomes not just a path or practice, but a lifestyle.
Absolutely. And while each path is unique, there are some basic elements that might be helpful in getting started. For me, key to working with water is a focus on the tactile experience with it. Water offers so many textures, temperatures, and sensations all around. And as long as it's not too hot or cold, it's safe and abundant enough to literally swim, bathe, and drench yourself in. And honestly, this is super corny and simple, but I feel like taking a good gulp of nice, cool water is such an underrated thing to appreciate, especially in a ritual kind of setting. Drinking in this source of hydration and life is a rare chance to feel something sink right down into you, and it's that sensation of the water traveling from my lips and inward that I focus my mind into reminding myself that, yes, much of my own body is actually made up of this lovely molecule. I think simple steps like these can offer meaningful, relatable, easy on-ramps to working water into a whole session or spell. Once you've connected with it, water naturally sinks into your body and resulting energy and can play powerful roles in your work. Especially for me, it tends to play two roles, one of nourishment and the other as a carrier or container. Water is a universal solvent, meaning it's exceptional at dissolving and combining with solutions that are added to it. I often leverage this idea in utilizing a vessel of clean water as something to enrich with energetic intent or magical potential, which I then might drink or pour out or otherwise act upon as however makes sense for what I'm looking to do with my work. My examples here are pretty focused on water's liquid form, but I think similar principles can easily apply to steam, ice, snow, or however else you're looking to connect and work with water in your own practice.
Yeah, for me, the key to working with water is being open to the experience and a willingness to literally go with the flow. Due to its nature and its ability to shift states of matter, water can be kind of hard to pin down and even more difficult to control. Think about how heavy rain can quickly lead to flooding. There's no stopping that. Working with water as a practice really needs flexibility and knowledge that it often brings change. Take a river, for example, my personal favorite form of water. If you visit a river at the same spot at the same time, day after day, it won't be the same river. There's different water flowing, new twigs and leaves being pulled by the current, new fish swimming along, new animals visiting. Water rarely stays the same for long, and with a practice based in this element, you may find yourself also ever flowing and changing. I think another key thing is to allow yourself to play with how you want to connect with this element and energy, and in what form or forms. We typically think about the water element in its liquid form, but as Jay mentioned, there are so many interesting textures and sensations that water offers. Maybe you dislike the rain, but a good snowstorm connects you right to witch. Or you don't vibe with the energy of lakes, but a steamy sauna is your favorite cleansing method. Be open-minded and curious about all that water has to offer.
I think Jay and Alyssa really spoke to most of the key ways to physically connect here, but I want to bring up some of the ways that water speaks not just to our bodies, but to our emotions and sense of self. Tears are a direct link here. Mixed with the salty ions of earth, they help cleanse us, body and soul. While it may not seem intuitive, a good cry is actually a great way to connect with and move this energy through our bodies. Personally, as someone who sits with a lot of soggy earth energy, crying creates movement. And there are times where I'm so laden with emotion that tears just don't come, and I can feel that stagnant water element. I know then that I need to focus on creating flow, sometimes with the help of other elements to dry things up or air things out. This often also involves movement of some kind. Like Atreyu in the swamps of sadness, I must keep moving forward. Consider your relationship with crying as a way to start this conversation. Ultimately, shadow work and the water element go hand in hand, not only because of the tie to emotions, but in bringing back that change and flow energy. Shadow work will inevitably leave you changed, and if you aren't feeling that, you probably aren't going deep enough. In some ways, shadow work is the canyon etched by time via waters passing through the landscape, the way that the body wears from emotions. Water not only creates forward change as it moves and we ride the wave, but also in its passing, leaving an indelible mark in its wake. As Alyssa mentioned, go with the flow is this element's mantra. Water energy loves to be free, to enact change, not just in the wild, but in the heart. Connecting with water through our emotions means learning to name, recognize, and allow for those emotions to flow through us. It's also about saying yes and, which means that connecting with this element requires that we be open to new things, to new experiences, to change, you know, whatever is just around the river bend.
Like our coverage of air and fire witchery, water witchery flows along six paths, and really, we probably could have kept going, so don't limit yourself. Water finds a way into a wide array of streams, so let's get started mapping them out a bit. We are going to keep it top level for this first part of the conversation, but in coming episodes, we will cover the array of diverse streams in deeper detail, as together we explore water witchery.
Up first, states of matter approaches water at its foundations, touching on each natural state of water and how each offers powerfully unique ways to build a witchcraft practice with water at its core. From liquid water to steam and steam power to icy frozen magic, this path highlights water's versatility and ubiquity in our natural world. For the witch who connects with water in its liquid form primarily, the path of the water witch embraces a more overall general approach to working their magic with water. Whether dancing in the rain, diving in the deep end, or cleansing in the shower, it's water's flowing state of matter that fills this practice to the brim. Next, we shift from liquid to gas with the steam witch, from simmer pots to healing saunas, and even the eruptive power of a geyser. This path can find many homes in these vapors. Steam offers a really unique angle to a water-based practice because you must take that element and apply heat, connecting to fire, to get those droplets suspended in air. It inherently combines three elements into one, and sometimes four. And finally, we slow things down by dropping the temp, specifically below 32 degrees Fahrenheit, where the ice witch works their magic with frost, snow, and the iciest of forms. With spells taking up some freezer space, or even out in the snow. The Ice Witch leans into the transformative powers of cold to work with water in its solidified forms. Don't forget your gloves for work in this practice. Waterways considers the natural environments dominated by water's influence and forces. For witches who feel truly at home on the riverbank, lakeshore, seashore, and bayou, or with the elementals who inhabit these aquatic realms, these specialties offer a few ways to create and cultivate a rich practice working in balance and participation with the waterways of our planet. Swift streams, babbling brooks, and wild waterfalls all fall under the River Witch's purview. This path is about the constantly moving and ever-changing bodies of water that we find in nature. Whether you find yourself connecting to the gentle water that glides over rocks and provides eddies for river critters, or wielding the power that carves canyons, this path offers many facets. From rivers, we cascade into the quiet strength that lies in lakes and ponds. Whereas the river witch connects their craft through the ever-changing energy, a lake witch finds power in the constant. But here, quiet doesn't mean docile. In the U.S., our Great Lakes have waves as intense as you would find at the seaside. But if you like your water with a good dose of earth in the mix, then you might love how the Swamp Witch taps into the blending of earth and water found in the bogs, swamps, marshes, and bayous of our world. The distinct energies of these environments foster a path of working with all states of water, as well as the particular growth and decay patterns which aren't often found elsewhere. But for the witch who taps deepest into the deepest of waters, it's the seas and oceans that we consider next. A sea witch, or ocean witch, depending on their location and attunement, connect their practice and energy with our largest bodies of water. This focus offers a bounty of possibilities, given the rich and complex environments that seas and oceans are. It may tie in nicely with an air connection in the Traveler Witch, should sailing these seas be calling to you too. In expanding our focus to energies on the largest scale here, the Water Elementals Witch feeds off the energies of the natural domains themselves. An observer of tides, swells, and seasonal shifting, this is a path spent in alignment and right relationship with the needs, rhythms, and inhabitants of our water-rich ecosystems, as well as the human communities in connection with their ebbs and flows.
Along the weather front, we again approach atmospheric magics, but this time via the lens of a connection with water. Now, you can approach weather magics from the element you are most comfortable with, but true high-level weather witchery involves working with all the elements involved to create a web of connections that fuel this potent magic. Because of this, it's very important to consider the impact of conjuring weather magics versus using existing patterns to fuel your work. More on that when we get to this episode. For now, let's cover the crafts that fall along the weather front. The first of these, the Fog Witch, uses water in one of its less dense and more elusive forms, a cloud energy that works great for cloaking and concealment magics. Fogcraft is often masked in a bit of mystery itself, by nature, and is one of the more complicated crafts to work with due to its dispersed energetic feel. From fog to clouds, we enter the territory of the Rain Witch. Rain magic has a long history through various cultures, and maybe some of the oldest magics that we know of. Water is life, and when it falls from the sky, that becomes an important way for us to replenish not just our wells, but lakes, rivers, and oceans. Water is a cycle, and the Rain Witch knows this best, using that turning of the atmospheric wheel to fuel their craft. Mixing in some elements of air and fire, the Storm Witch builds upon the rain craft with a bit more potency. That overlay of other elements packs a punch, from high winds to lightning. The Storm Witch wraps these into an energetic torrent to draw from. And when the air turns chilly, the Snow Witch brings a connection to water weather via ice and crystalline structures. Whether it's using pack snow in craft magic or pulling on the power of snowflakes as they fall, this path embraces water in its densest of states, from snowflakes to icicles and glaciers, leaning on the balanced structures of a frozen water molecule. We would be remiss if we didn't take a moment to talk about storms and water elementals, those weather movements that go beyond the basic science and seem to hold an emotion or presence to them. And when the skies are clear, the path of lunar tides takes the stage. This path focuses on the power of the moon, whether in a full or new moon state, and its impacts on the tides. The full moon witch shines brightest when the moon is heavy and round in the sky, pulling on that reflected sunlight in its silvery form. This craft aligns with, pulls on, and uses that energy for manifesting. Full moon witches generally tie their craft tightly to the moon cycle, following the rhythm set by this dual gravitational pull. In myths and fables across so many cultures, the full moon above has inspired an endless repertoire of stories and ideas, offering many different ways a full moon practice might look and feel. Abundance spells, manifestation and attraction work, and a general practice built around charging with moonlight all fit wonderfully here. In opposition, the new moon witch uses the darkest of nights as their wellspring. From releasing and rest to prepping intentions for the waxing cycle, the new moon witch finds themselves doing their best work during the darkest part of the lunar month. Maybe they build their spell schedule around this rhythm, or find that stillness allows for deeper meditation and reflection. So, if you find you feel the most connected at this time, you may be interested in this path. From the glow of the moon to its impact on our oceans, tidal witches are deeply attuned to the ebb and flow, the tides of nature and life. From bodies of water to our internal cycles, this path uses that fluctuation of energy to shape their craft. This might look like using tide timings for attraction and banishment work. It also might look like tuning in internally to our own ebb and flow of energy and emotions and using that to power intent and manifestation work. Tidal witches may keep pace with the movement of our internal flow, but they aren't alone. Those on the cunning path are deeply attuned to the impact of this element in and on the body.
The cunning path brings water into the art of cleansing and healing, and here we also touch on the controversial practices of blood magic. From rinsing tools to energetically clear them, to crafting tinctures for colds, to using a dab of blood in a binding spell, this path contains three distinct variations in witchcraft. The cleansing witch uses water to clear and purify, be that a space, crystals, or themselves. This can be water on its own, infusions, or steam from a pot of simmering herbs, or maybe even a magical bath. No matter the method or target of cleansing, this craft balances the cleansing removal of things with the mindfulness that something new and good then fills its place. The cleansing witch leans into water's ability to both wash and nourish in this practice. We flow from cleansing to restoring magics with the healer. From wounds to headaches, flus to bruises, the healer seeks to mend the body. This path can easily tie into practices such as herbalism, but modern medicine and science should not be ignored here. The healer knows their limits and knows the importance of things like vaccines. In the same vein as healer, this next path also focuses on the body, this time as a blood witch. Now, using blood, whether that's venous or menstrual, in magic is rather controversial and definitely not something that's for everyone. However, it can be a powerful tool and focus in workings, such as binding spells or ancestor work, so long as you keep health and safety in mind. For our final foray into water witchery, we find ourselves simmering in a bubbling blend. These are the classic witch at the cauldron paths, or in our modern day, stockpot, tea kettle, or bathtub. Here we find concoctions that are meant to be consumed or non-edible, and of course, magical in nature. First, we revisit a path that we touched on in our fire series, the Brew Witch. From teas to soups and hay, even juicing, in Brew Witch, we explore all things liquid-based and delicious. This can be someone who weaves their craft and the element of water to make food and drink with magical intent, or they can be someone who uses these consumables to simply inspire their work, or to share with others. Many ways to stew on this one. Now, if you're someone who's brewing or crafting or building drinks with distinct magical purpose and intent, then you've got an elixir witch path. This direction uses all the methods of crafting drinks that you might enjoy to be the spell. Elixir making takes the juices, coffees, teas, or even alcoholic drinks like infusions, bitters, and cocktails, and builds magic into every step and ingredient choice, with the goal of channeling spell work through your creation and consumption of said drink. From brews and elixirs, we bubble over to the potion witch. Here, instead of crafting libations meant to be drunk, the potion witch uses their creations for purely magical purposes. From baths with salts and oils to a concoction kept on the altar and used in spell work,
These are liquids that are non-edible in nature, designed only to be used in the craft.
With all these options on the table, how do you know if a water bath is for you, though? And specifically, which one?
It's a big question, but here's what I've learned on my journey so far. Like fire, water has always had a through line in my practice, even if it's not my main focus. It's soothing, nourishing, exciting, and balances me out. I've always loved being in and around water, from summer days in my grandparents' pool to swimming in rivers, and even my six-year-old ambition of one day being a quote-unquote dolphin trainer, whatever that means. Whenever I enter my astral space for meditation or spell work, I'm inevitably sitting by a stream when I first arrive. And now that I live on an island, I'm finding even more ways to connect. From the ferry rides to noting how being surrounded by water affects the weather patterns, it's very much becoming more of a forefront of my daily life and therefore my practice. And as we just illustrated, water is so much more than what we should drink 8 glasses of in a day. It's the ocean, the snow, a vessel for healing, and the water that courses through your own veins. Knowing what is right for you and if this is a path that you would like to walk is just going to come down to trusting your gut and trial and error. For example, I connect very deeply with rivers, and I was always around them as a kid, and there's just something that soothes my soul about them. Then in my 20s, I moved to California and lived close to the beach, which was a very different experience with this element. I found the Pacific Ocean to be wild and powerful and vast in ways that felt endless. Then I moved to the Pacific Northwest, and the Puget Sound has a different energy altogether, being a mix of salt and fresh water, being large and semi-contained at the same time, and full of new wildlife like orcas that I had never encountered before. I connect to each of these sources of energy in vastly different ways, and I have a love and appreciation for all, but at the end of the day, rivers are still my wheelhouse. Just feel it out.
Yeah, I mean, given the many ways water works into our lives and the world around us, I think it's an important key to knowing if a water path and which one specifically is for you is in identifying which one of those ways just really strikes a chord for you, just like Alyssa was saying. Water, like air, is a medium capable of carrying vibrations far and wide. So resonance is definitely a word here for what I'm getting at. So when you've got a good sense of your own favored H2O aspect, perhaps in a way that one or some of the water witchery paths describe, make a point to spend some quality time with it in that way and consider its particular characteristics and energetic possibilities. Keep your sensors up for something that really amazes you about it, that easily offers a gateway to magical possibility. Let's take snow, for example, an area which very much resonates with my interests and heart. I've learned this through years of snowball fights, ski trips, sledding days, and shoveling. Oh, so much shoveling. And one thing in particular always stands out to me as someone who also deeply loves music and sound. I've always been amazed by snow's deadening effect on sound. If you've ever taken a walk on a very snowy day, it's sometimes halting how noise you're used to hearing in that area. Road noise, planes overhead, whatever it is, birds even, is muffled, blocked altogether by the snowy buildup around you. Just one example of a thing which feels powerful, energetically magical to me, and calls to me to work with snow in my spell work and overall craft. So spending a little time getting to know your own relationship with water will get you in a good state of mind to dig deeper and get personalized.
Yeah, my connection with water really started young. I have always been drawn to it, so much so that there's several stories about me as a young toddler being in the bath and screaming when I was taken out. Like, deeply screaming, like the world is ending screaming. I just wanted to be in water all day, and luckily growing up next to a lake and in a climate that inspires swimming pools, I spent a lot of my youth in or near the water. That hasn't changed as I've grown and moved, always near water. I am a mountains meet water sort of witch, and there is just something so energetically amazing about the two opposing forces at work, balancing. That being said, cleansing has and always will be the biggest entry point for me, whether it's cleansing the body through submersion like a good bath, the cells through consumption, I love some fizzy water, or the soul through crying, which isn't my favorite, but still feels good. Even just being near water has this powerful impact on my energy, as through though the ripples can carry away the heaviness. Water offers both the opportunity to sink and to float, another point of unique interaction. Water as a cleansing tool is both literal and metaphysical, which is also something I find to be really potent. Any act that we can visualize and really do with our hands packs that energetic punch. And while I may have started with cleansing, lunar tides, the weather front, and the cunning path are big parts of my practice. So come for the tea, stay for the diversity. My best piece of advice here for knowing whether water is something that you might connect with would be to explore it in its many variety of forms, not just physical versus mental and emotional, but also in its different states of matter. You may find with that connecting with the smell of ice and snow much more fluid than, say, a simmer pot. You may also find that getting into your feels brings the most authentic connection. Water truly is diverse, so I do think there is probably a little something here for every witch. Explore.
And while some crafts may come more naturally than others, like all things, practice will always improve skill, even innate skill. That's why the elements are recurring themes across the witch's wheel cycles. It's a consistent building upon skill and relationship.
In the sapling cycle, which you can check out in our sapling playlist for more specifics, we start with the basics of working with water, covering the basics of cleansing, liquid water, and of lunar cycle practices. In the fledgling cycle, cleansing work deepens, ice work sets in, working with the full moon comes into view, and we begin building potions. In ember, we explore healing magic, working with water's gaseous form as steam, and finding the new moon in our lunar workings. In the river wheel turn, skills with advanced healing, elixirs, lunar quarters, and water familiars finds its way. And then, as the wheel cycles into witch, it's about specializing and mixing to find the right path for you.
Did you know Atomic Witchcraft isn't just a podcast? It's a community. You can find us on Patreon, Discord, Facebook, and more. We are also excited to announce the return of our free virtual Zoom gatherings, our Sunday Havens, happening on the fourth Sunday of every month at noon Pacific. All this great info can be found on our Linktree. Link is in the bio. Let's be witchy together.